They were living under the names Charles and Carol Gasco, mingling with retirees on Santa Monica's 3rd Street Promenade. They were actually longtime Boston fugitives Whitey Bulger and his girlfriend Catherine Greig. Today, the FBI says their arrests last night were a direct result of someone who saw a new FBI TV ad and tipped off agents who went to a street and saw a couple that looked like Bulger and Greig.
At approximately 5:45 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, using a ruse, agents and other task force members lured Mr. Bulger out of his apartment. Agents determined that the individual was, in fact, Mr. Bulger. He was placed under arrest without incident.
So, the second most wanted man in the world behind Osama bin Laden is under arrest. Whitey Bulger, the mob boss from South Boston, wanted in connection with 19 murders, including allegedly strangling a mob girlfriend with his bare hands. An FBI informant, hated, also cheered by people who saw him as a modern-day Robin Hood. Loose inspiration for the Jack Nicholson character in the 2006 film The Departed. Here, giving advice to a young neighborhood boy.
When you decide to be something, you can be it. That's what they don't tell you in the church. When I was your age, they would say we could become cops or criminals. Today, what I'm saying is this. When you're facing a loaded gun, what's the difference?
Let's get the latest on Whitey Bulger's arrest and his legacy with Boston Herald columnist Peter Galzinis, who joins us in the studio. Peter, welcome.
Thank you.
We also have WBUR's David Boeri with us as well. You've both been covering this story for decades and since about, well, midnight today. So we appreciate your being here. And, you know, your very first thoughts on hearing he was under arrest, especially after covering him for so long. Peter, start with you.
Surreal. Absolutely surreal. I had come to believe that he would be coming back, and I guess you could call it on his own terms when his health got to the point when it made no more sense for him to be outside.
He's 81, right?
That's right. And I thought that my scenario had his brother, William, coordinating that and him sailing off into a sick ward in a federal prison. Hmm. So this was I had given up on the idea that they would capture him, so to speak.
Well, and David, your first thoughts?
I was stunned. I was stunned. I woke up. I heard the news. I ran up to my barn where I have 20 file cabinets full of Bulger stuff that I've accumulated over the 26 years, and I wanted to try and get it all in the car and like rush to the studio. I was convinced he was coming back, and he was going to get an IRA funeral, sort of in the tough, towny South Boston section where there's been a lot of sympathy for the IRA because of his family's hostility to the FBI. I thought they were going to have a private but public funeral for him, and that's how he'd come back. But this I didn't see.
Well, let's explain what the FBI says happened. They launched a new TV campaign this week asking people to look for Bulger's longtime girlfriend, Catherine Greig. You know, a Marilyn Monroe lookalike if you sort of squint your eyes a little bit. They've been picked up. Now, it had been reported that there had been previous sightings of the couple in Orange County in California over the last few years. David, start with you. The FBI just had their press conference a little while ago today. You pressed officials there on, you know, whether or not those tips had anything to do with this, or was it just the TV campaign, or had they had the apartment under surveillance? What'd they say?
That's right. There have been America's Most Wanted, which is actually been getting most of the leads that they've then given to the FBI. The FBI was getting most of its leads from America's Most Wanted, the TV show, has had at least 10 reports from that area in recent years. There were sightings, previous sightings or alleged sightings in San Diego and at a hair salon of Catherine a few years ago. I ran out to California to
Venice Beach,
which is just south of Santa Monica. And we also crossed the border into Mexico, where it was thought that he could easily get the heart medication that he takes, Atenolol. So there have been a lot of sightings out there in that area. Now, it would be interesting to go back to see those tips, which probably have a lot more credibility than they were given credit for at the time they came in.
Well, your sources are telling you that essentially what happened is that after this TV ad, they also were swamped with tips, but they had a young crackerjack person looking at those tips, and it made all the difference.
Well, this, the problem for the FBI is because the FBI was compromised. weaponized by Bulger in a serious way. It was corrupted by him.
Reminding people, and we'll tell you more about it if you are from outside this area, but he was an informant, but he ended up pretty much running the FBI bureau here.
Well, that's it. I mean, and this what makes him different than most mobsters is that he ended up working for the FBI. He became a top secret informant, top echelon informant. That allowed him to snitch on his rivals, mostly members of the mafia, take them out, and then gain market position. And at the same time, in return, he had corrupted the FBI so that they tipped him to investigations by other law enforcement agencies. And they even tipped him, and this is most treacherous of all, to people who might be informing on him.
Yeah. So people he's accused of subsequently killing.
There was a lot of cynicism in this town that the FBI weren't interested in catching him. The FBI resisted bringing in the U.S. Marshals for years and years to help with the search. They brought them in 7 months ago. All of a sudden, a U.S. Marshal named Neil Johnson goes through all the records, and there were 250 phone calls, I'm told, that came in as a result of that spot. Number 249 was the one he went to the office and said, check this one out. This is credible. That's the one that brought them in.
Peter Gelsenis, let's talk more about who Whitey Bulger was in this town and what makes this story so compelling. You mentioned his brother, William Bulger, who was, for 17 years, one of the most powerful politicians in the state and one of the most erudite individuals, the Senate president in town. A sort of a biblical story there, the good brother, bad brother. And then what exactly did Whitey Bulger do? He operated out of a liquor store that he extorted and took over, but what did he do?
Well, he dominated a way of life that has changed now. I mean, the town has changed quite a bit. But back then, it was a kind of a gin mill sort of universe where every local bar, every corner bar had a bookie.
This is South Boston.
This is South Boston.
Sort of an island off of the city
Irish
of
American
yeah.
island.
Right.
Yeah.
And this was, again, going back to the, he went to jail for some time in the 50s, but he came back in the mid-60s and began his ascent and really sort of taking over the local crime scene and owning it. I mean, he was a bully who became a scourge and a predator, I mean, but a very, very smart one. I mean, even though he was in this sort of kind of gin mill culture, he was never really part of it. He was able to kind of he had the insidious talent for understanding it and exploiting the weaknesses of all of those around
him.
Well,
you tell us more about that, Peter Gelsenis, because you live in South Boston now right. and then. You're from there.
Right.
And first of all, what's it like to be reporting on this person who's so powerful? And what exactly was he seeing in people that enabled him to get them to do such terrible things?
Well, what he saw in them was weakness, and that weakness was translated into a kind of weird admiration for him. He was seen as, this notion that he was a kind of a Robin Hood figure, a rogue who in his own way, exercised his own weird brand of justice, kept the town free of drugs, which was a monstrous lie. But he had clawed his way up to the top of that culture, and it was ruthless, didn't hesitate to threaten people, did it. And I worked on a story some years ago back in 1980 with a reporter who's passed away now, but he did threaten that reporter. And even the police at that time, the local police, the Boston police I'm talking about, were a little surprised that he had stepped out and actually done that.
Well, I mean, not only that. I mean, some of the other victims, somebody was killed in a... And if you've seen The Sopranos, they lifted a lot of this directly from some of these stories. Someone was killed in a phone booth, shot so many times he was cut
Eddie
in half.
Eddie O'Connor's, yeah.
And we mentioned that these young girls that, just like in The Sopranos where that girlfriend of a mobster is stalked in the woods and then violently killed.
It's even more harrowing than that. I mean, they found some bodies some years ago in Dorchester, right by the expressway, but those bodies were actually dug up from a basement where he had originally buried them.
Yeah.
So this is gruesome.
What's spectacular about this is most mob bosses keep their hands clean. They give orders. He was right there, loved, to kill. And he acted as he had complete immunity. The other thing about mob bosses, often they stay on their own turf. They stay on our turf and they have a respectful position to cops. He acted with complete impunity in this town. And
Were they afraid of him? Were the police and the FBI afraid of him? Is that how he managed to?
There was absolute fear because you never knew if anybody was covering your backside. But he told his henchman, Kevin Weeks. He once told Kevin Weeks that at any moment, if he wanted, he could run up to the FBI office and get six agents to come out and pick up machine guns and go on a hit with him. I mean, that is...
They were also on his payroll. Yeah. I mean, there's a classic story about, you know, his quote to Weeks one time is that Christmas is for cops and kids, or kids and cops, I guess. But the thing I think the larger audience has to understand is that, you know, South Boston is a very political hamlet, and the two Bulger brothers, and also a very streetwise, in that time, anyway, it was a very, very, very streetwise hamlet. These two brothers own both universes. One of them owned the political universe, which fed people with jobs, et cetera, and the other one dominated the criminal enterprise. Yeah.
Well, just there's so many more stories I know you can tell. Peter Gelsenis there, a columnist for the Boston Herald, and our own WBUR's David Boeri. But just, David, what happens now? Will he, in coming back, will he go on trial? Will he implicate other people? Are there more shoes to drop?
See, this is, at the heart of it, it is a story about political corruption. He comes back. We're going to see him back fairly soon. Is he going to go to trial? At 81, is he going to go to trial? Probably not, you know, and he's going to come back. And here's the big question. And the first question for him, if he starts talking, anybody tip you off while you were on the road? Who tipped you off while you were in Louisiana?
Who supplied you with the money? How do you pay for the cosmetic surgery for his girlfriend?
But how did you avoid arrest on these places? Who tipped him off? Was the FBI, was somebody past retired or current in the FBI tipping him off? Think about what he can say. Think about who we can give up. He climbed the ladder all the way to Washington. There's a foreign policy component in this because he sold guns to the IRA and then dimed out the operation to Washington, and they stopped the shipment off the coast of Ireland.
Look,
it's stunning.
We have to say the FBI was very defensive today. This is a new generation. You know, he committed a lot of these crimes in their grandparents' FBI. This is a new generation that claimed they never stopped looking for him. We also should say all the charges we've been talking about are, you know, simply that. At this point, allegations, but
it does get a huge sort of monkey off their back, particularly in this local office. I mean, I think, you know, the amount of respect that people, particularly in the neighborhood, held the FBI, particularly after the admissions that he had been an FBI informant, were extremely low. Nobody really believed that the FBI would actually do this, you know.
At the end of the day, though, they can say they got their man. In fairness, they can say now they got their man. It's a new generation of FBI, but they can say it.
David Boeri again from WBUR, Peter Gelsenis, Boston Herald. And, you know, we should say as well, all day here in Boston, we've been hearing from people in the neighborhood, many of them also very relieved that the FBI got that man. We'll continue to follow the story. Gentlemen, thank you both.
You're welcome.